What's going on, everybody? Justin Morgenstein back with you on another edition of Phillies Today. And it's going to be a tough edition of Phillies Today, if I'm being absolutely honest with you. In my 2+ years of doing this, this is one of those pods where, you know, when they lost to the Diamondbacks, when they, you know, I guess the last 3 playoff losses, I've done podcasts on them. And this feels like one of those. It feels like a playoff loss based off of what has happened the last few weeks with this baseball team. And I left you after doing the pod last Thursday night feeling really optimistic. And then obviously Kyle Tucker signs with the Dodgers late. And then everything sort of unfolds with Bo that Friday. They re-sign JT. We're going to go over all of it. But I understand people are frustrated right now. And I just want to kind of come on here and say that I'm with you in that frustration. And I'm somebody, if you've listened to me before, this is your first time, if this is your, you know, 50th time, I love the Phillies. And I am pretty much the eternal optimist when it comes to the Phillies in terms of finding a way to wrap my mind around whatever the team looks like and spinning it into a positive and saying, you know, if this falls this way and if this falls that way, then I think they're going to be fine. But man, it is tough right now because of what's kind of transpired over the last week. The Phillies are essentially the laughingstock of baseball right now. And they got played by the Mets. They got played by Bichette and his team. And we might as well just get right into it right now. We'll get to some other stuff later in the pod, like some Hall of Fame stuff. Definitely want to touch on that for a little bit. But definitely going to be a little bit of a vent session here off of what has transpired over the past week with the Phillies. And with the whole Bo thing, I just want to say that, like, I find it difficult to be mad at Bo Bichette or his agent. Like, a lot of people are saying, oh, when he comes to the Citizens Bank Park in June, like, got to boo him, we got to do this, we got to do that. But, you know, that is a great, great, great deal for Bo Bichette, and his agent did a phenomenal job. Played the Phillies like a fiddle, and now he gets a 3-year deal that's $124 million, but it's essentially a 1-year deal because of the opt-out, and he goes into a free agent class next year that offensively, like, has nothing in terms of, you know, high-level MLB caliber hitters, and he's probably going to be the top bat on the market next year. Like, I believe the best free agent hitters up to this point would be, say, a Suzuki next year. There are not a lot of great hitters on the market next year. And now Bo Bichette, if he puts himself in a position to, you know, stay healthy and have the season he did last year, he's going to get way more money than he ever could have thought. And now he has a $42 million insurance policy that basically, if his season's a disaster or he gets hurt, he at least gets to make $42 million next year and then opt out again because there's an opt out after year two. So I find it difficult to be mad at Bo Bichette because that's a contract I think anybody's taking. And I think his agent, as I said, did a phenomenal job with it. And if Steve Cohen is going to panic after losing out on Kyle Tucker to the Dodgers, which essentially made this whole thing, you know, go the way it did, because the Mets get mad that they don't get Kyle Tucker, which was obviously the best fit for them, because now the Mets have, what, 3 or 4 second basemen on the roster they're going to be starting at one time. They miss out on the fit, and Steve Cohen says, I'm not just going to, you know, lick my wounds, which you want your owner to do. And granted, Steve Cohen has a lot more money than John Middleton. I understand that. But he went out, and David Stearns went out, and they signed Bo Bichette to the deal that he, you know, ended up getting, which, again, would have been tough for the Phillies because, in addition to if they signed him to that contract, the $24 million that he'd be making, or the $42 million that he'd be making next year, you have to add the luxury tax penalty on top of that. So he'd be making, or the Phillies would be, I guess, penalized almost $100 million. They'd be paying $100 million for Bo Bichette next year based off of the luxury tax implications and the contracts that are, you know, on the books right now. And you're going to have to pay $20 million for Nick Castellanos not to play for you next year. You have to pay $19 million for Taijuan Walker next year. Like, the Aaron Nola contract is one that is turning out to be a disaster for this team. Like, that is a total disaster. And we'll get to Ranger, too, because Ranger signs with Boston. But, like, that's the reason you can't sign Ranger Suarez. And I didn't think that there was ever a possibility that Ranger was coming back, so I never really expected it. But I would tell you, everyone would be much happier right now if they re-signed Ranger Suarez and Aaron Nola went to the Braves or wherever he went. But, you know, now you're stuck with them, and you're stuck with a lot of these deals. And the Phillies don't do the short-term high AAV thing. I don't know if it's because John Middleton doesn't feel comfortable with it. I don't know if because it doesn't have the money for it, but that's just not their philosophy right now. We'll see if things change maybe after things get renegotiated next year in terms of the CBA. But, man, it just feels like a total missed opportunity for this team. And now, the worst part of it was the immediate reaction for me when Bo signed with the Mets, obviously, was, you know, I'm upset. I wasn't expecting it. But then when they go out an hour later and they sign JT to the 3-year deal for $15 million a year, I wanted to like slam my head through a wall. That made me so mad because clearly you had no plan going into this offseason because the Bo thing fell right into their lap. Remember, according to many different sources, Bo approached them. They did not approach Bo to start. Bo Bichette, when it was clear that he wasn't going back to the Blue Jays, approached the Phillies and said, I would be interested in playing here. And so it fell into their lap. They got played, and him and his agent ended up making out phenomenally, make $42 million next year, hit free agency again, and then they get a 7 or 8 year deal next offseason. So it's really tough, and they got played badly. And I just, it makes me wonder if sort of the game is passed by Dave Dombrowski because, as I said, he pivots to the JT thing, and then he comes out in the press conference, which, by the way, that JT press conference, what was it, on Wednesday, was just a total, like, the vibes were awful. And they even let JT go early in it because clearly all the questions were going to be about Bo Bichette, and people wanted to ask Dombrowski all these questions. And the fact that he said we're content with the roster we have, like, that's BS, man. And now you're running it back for essentially the fourth straight year with this team that can't get over the hump, and you're doing the same thing over and over again. Like, they're not going to get creative at all. You could have at least, after that happens, say, okay, we're going to pivot. We're not going to give JT that money, or we're at least going to wait it out because nobody's paying JT Realmuto 3 years, $45 million. Nobody. Wasn't going to happen anywhere. And the fact they just did it an hour later and expect people to go, oh, well, we tried, and now we get to bring back JT, and we'll run back the exact same team that won 96 games last year, and we'll be fine. That should be good enough for everybody. Like, that's, I almost cursed. Like, that is BS. And you just could have gotten so much more creative. Even you could, and like, Alec Bohm being back now is just such a downer. Like, he is somebody who is just not fun to watch at this point. I understand he hit 287 last year, but if you keep doing the same things over and over again, how can you expect different results? And I know they're just going to continue to say, oh, we won 96 games last year. We've won the division 2 years in a row. You are worse than you were last year. The rotation is worse. You lost Ranger. I understand you're adding Andrew Painter, but you lost Ranger. The lineup is worse. You're losing, you know, Castellanos, Kepler, whatever, and you added Adolis Garcia, and you're going to let Justin Crawford play every day, which is fine, I guess. But everyone's a year older. Schwarber's not going to hit 56 home runs again. We'll see if Bryce can stay healthy, and we'll see what Trey gives you. But then again, with that lineup, like, if Trey, Bryce, or Schwarber go down, like, you are in a lot of trouble. So that's something to monitor in terms of maybe depth signings throughout the rest of the offseason. But bullpen got better. I'll give you that. Like, I think Brad Keller is an upgrade over Matt Strom, and I'm actually excited to see Brad Keller. But I just, like, you got worse this offseason. And Dave Dombrowski sitting up there with a straight face and saying, we're content, is just an absolute insult to the fans. And I'm really upset. I understand why a lot of fans are upset. And as I said right in the beginning, like, I'm usually the one that can find the silver lining out of anything when it comes to the Phillies. I get so excited to watch this team year in and year out. Like, this is the type of time in January and February that I start getting really excited for the season. I'm not excited. Like, I am not excited for the season right now. And it's just tough. And I don't know if it's a Dombrowski thing where the game has just passed him by, like I said, and he isn't as sharp and, you know, as, I guess, creative as he used to be as a GM. Or is it John Middleton, who just is sort of, you know, capped his spending and doesn't want to sort of take us to the next level like the Dodgers and the Mets have? And I understand that their ownership is clearly, you know, a lot richer than John Middleton is, frankly. But you still have to be able to be creative. And for somebody who, you know, wants his bleeping trophy back and wants to do all he can to help their get, you know, back to the World Series and win it and get a parade down Broad Street, like, I don't know how you just sit there and say this is okay. And like I mentioned, Bohm, like, you could very easily still trade Alec Bohm, sign Eugenio Suarez, you get a guy with 30 to 35 home run upside, understanding that he's going to strike out a lot, but you're going to have Alec Bohm hitting behind Bryce Harper for the third straight year. Like, that's unbelievable, man. Like, there's no way I can feel optimistic about that going into the year. And just JT Realmuto is going to be here making $15 million in his age 38 season. Like, are you kidding? Like, that is just, there's no way anybody around the league was giving him that money. There was no interest in him aside from the Rays and the Marlins had some interest, but there was no way they were giving him 3 years, $45 million. So just pretty brutal. And I mean, I would be mad if the Bo to the Mets thing, you know, if Bo went somewhere else other than the Mets, like, I'd still be pretty upset. But the Mets over the last few days have really just put this over the top. And what the Mets and their creative front office have done, the Bo Bichette deal obviously falls into their lap after Kyle Tucker signs. And again, good for Bo and his agent for taking full advantage of that, even though I will say the press conference yesterday with Bo Bichette, or on Wednesday, with Bo and the Mets was really funny when they asked him about, is this a one-year deal with John Heyman? And he literally just looks over at his agent, and his agent answers it for him. So clearly it's going to be a one-year deal for him. I don't think it's a great deal for the Mets either. Like, I think that Kyle Tucker was a much better fit and that they probably, you know, have four second basemen on the roster. So I'm interested to see how that goes. But what they've done since then is the reason why I think the Mets are probably going to be better than the Phillies this year. They trade for Luis Robert, who, again, I understand Luis Robert has had not the best couple of seasons since, I think, 2023, where he hit 30-some homers. And I don't think he's going to be somebody that pushes them over the edge. But that's a creative deal to where you bring in a guy with super high upside. They got rid of their, like, one of eight second basemen, Luis Angel Acuna, who goes to the White Sox. And you at least get somebody who provides you some upside and is something different than what you had last year. Like, the Mets had a collapse last year at the end of the season. They get rid of Pete Alonso. They get rid of Brandon Nimmo, which wasn't met with, obviously, a lot of fanfare when it happened. But they make real good changes. They get Luis Robert, and last night, or on Wednesday night, they get Freddy Peralta from the Brewers. And look, they give up a haul, and they get Freddy Peralta, and they get Tobias Myers. And the Freddy Peralta thing is just a rental, kind of like Bo, so interested to see how that ends up playing out. But they give up two top 100 prospects in Jet Williams and Sproat, who, again, I think have some really good upside. And actually, kind of like the deal for the Brewers, just because Jet Williams is the exact type of player that they like to, you know, have there, like Bryce Turang and Jackson Churio. And he's like one of those guys with some real good speed, some real good, you know, defensive metrics. So I actually think it's a nice little trade for the Brewers there. But again, the Mets find a way to get better. And I don't think their rotation is as good as the Phillies, but got a lot better, I'll tell you that. So, yeah, it's not great. It really isn't. And then to top it all off, Ranger and Ron Hare. It was crazy to hear Ranger get up there at his Red Sox press conference and say, you know, I'm fine with Ranger, and that's how everybody's always pronounced it, but I actually go by Ron Hare, which was stunning to see. So, Ron Hare, or Ranger Suarez, I'm still going to call him Ranger. Everyone's going to call him Ranger because it's just such a cool name. But he, you know, has his press conference with the Red Sox. He seems thrilled, and all those pictures of him just smiling in a Red Sox uniform just also make me want to throw up. So that's a tough one. And, you know, I never really thought they were going to bring back Ranger, and I was fine with them letting go of him. But that was to, you know, open things up for other moves to get made. So that didn't obviously end up happening, but yeah, so now they're in a spot where they essentially have the same roster as last year without Ranger Suarez, and they swap out Matt Strom for Brad Keller, and they swap out Castellanos and Kepler for Crawford and Adolis Garcia. So that's what you're looking at. Same infield, you know, same catcher, but a year older. And the crazy thing is with the JT contract, like, JT had a, like, below average offensive year for a catcher, I guess you would say, like, pretty average maybe, but that's the year you're hoping for this season. But you know he's going to get worse. That's the whole kicker with this all. And I understand people will say, oh, you know, he's great with the pitching staff. There are so many catchers in baseball who know how to command a pitching staff. And I don't think all these pitchers and all these guys are going to fall off a cliff because JT Realmuto wasn't back there. Victor Caratini, who signed, like, later that day for half the money, would have been okay, I promise. Like, they would have been okay with Victor Caratini behind the plate. But I digress. But that was also part of the frustrating thing. And there are still options out there, but Dave Dombrowski says he's content with the whole thing. So I feel like Andujar would still be a good option, who you could platoon with Brandon Marsh, who hit like, you know, Andujar hit 389 against lefties last year. You would take that in a second, obviously. Eugenio Suarez, who I mentioned, is still out there. You could easily trade Alec Bohm, who you're not re-signing next year anyway, who is going to be a free agent and is now entering year two or three of, you know, being on the team, but clearly, you know, wanting to be, or, you know, the team wanting him to be gone at one point in the offseason and them getting no bites, essentially. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic. And how do you think JT feels? Like, you think JT was just like, I'm back, guys. How we doing? And, like, I mean, teammates were texting Bo Bichette the week of his wedding, asking him if he, you know, is going to potentially become a Philly. Like, just a very, very unique dynamic it's going to be going into the season. And it's something that, you know, is really, really a shame. And I think you still have to make a couple moves because the depth of this team is just not going to be there if Bryce Harper, Trey Turner, or Kyle Schwarber go down. So I think there's a chance they make another signing or two. And to make room for JT, they also DFA'd Weston Wilson, who was picked up by the Orioles, so did not clear waivers. So he will not be on the team any longer. So you've got Otto Kemp in there. You've got, you know, obviously Marshawn to back up JT. So that's what your depth options are looking at right now, which is just great. So, yeah, that's pretty much all I've got on the free agency thing so far. I'm sure there's some stuff I'm missing, but just had to sort of get that off my chest because it's a frustrating time right now to be a Phillies fan. You sort of got to put your tail between your legs, and it's a season where I'm not hopeful going into it for the first time in what feels like a long time. And I understand, again, they're going to say this team came in first place last year. They won 96 games. You're bringing back the same core. And just their fear of breaking up this core, and I guess going back to what you had in 2012 to 2018, is sort of what's holding them back. And the lack of creativity and the unwillingness to change anything just because you're scared of not filling the ballpark up every night is what loser organizations do. And unfortunately, I think they're in that territory right now. So a couple other things I want to go over. Another thing that just sort of made me not happy this week that I saw, and something that I thought was hilarious when I saw it on Twitter, was Aaron Nola's pitching for Team Italy in the WBC, which is just absolutely ridiculous also. Like, first of all, what ties does Aaron Nola have to Italy? Like, I think his, like, ancestors are from there, sure. Like, what ties? He's from Louisiana. What ties does Aaron Nola have to Italy? But, sure, let's have the guy who's, you know, on a five more years left of a terrible contract and had a 6 ERA last year. Let's throw him out there in the WBC instead of get him, you know, ready to go for spring training. So that's just ridiculous. And Sanchez might have to now. It feels like the Dominican Republic kind of pressuring him to pitch in the WBC just because they need arms. And, you know, Christopher Sanchez, I can't get mad at just because he's one of the few guys on the team that, you know, obviously had a great year last year, and he's somebody who I trust at the end of the day. So I think that his innings will probably be limited as well, which will help. But the Nola thing is just, he's a huge reason why they can't go out there and make some of these deals. And for him to say, yeah, pitcher for Italy and WBC, for what? Why are you pitching for Team Italy? It just makes absolutely no sense. And I'm shocked that somebody didn't get in his ear and say that was a bad idea. But, you know, get excited to watch, you know, Aaron Nola serve up some Italian-style meatballs for Italy in the WBC. So looking forward to that. That'll be just great. But anyway, I will give some good news before we get out of here on the pod. I know that was 19 minutes of just ranting and raving about this terrific week that we've had here in Philadelphia, which, again, by the way, like, been a rough week here. The Flyers lost on Wednesday night, like, the most heartbreaking fashion you can imagine. Like, they missed an empty net goal, and then they lose a game in Utah. The Sixers have been kind of in a skid lately and not playing very well. The Eagles can't find an offensive coordinator. It is just a rough go of it in Philadelphia. But some positive news. It feels like after the Hall of Fame voting came out on Wednesday night, congrats to Carlos Beltran, by the way, and also congrats to Andrew Jones for getting in. Those two guys into the Hall of Fame and will be the class of 2026 that gets inducted in Cooperstown this summer. But a huge development for Chase Utley, who is up to 59.1% in the Hall of Fame voting, which in year two is really impressive. And he is going to be a Hall of Famer. Like, he is going to reach that 75% threshold. If you look at the history and how it typically tracks, he is going to be a Hall of Famer. And next year might be the year where he gets 75% and he is into Cooperstown. So that could be really exciting. And that'll be something where a lot of people from Philadelphia, I'm sure, will be going up to Cooperstown and watching Chase get inducted. I know I would definitely be into that. So that'll be something really interesting to monitor next year, and good for Chase too, because it's very clear that his 5 to 6 year peak in 06 to like 11, 12 was out of control. And it was clearly his peak. I appreciate that they're appreciating the peaks and that they are taking that into account much more than just the longevity of somebody's career. So great for Chase. He's probably getting in next year, which is really exciting. J-Roll, 25.4%. He's probably not going to get in. It probably will be on the outside looking in. But so just thought it was interesting there. But I thought in his first year, Cole Hamels getting 23%. Kind of interesting. And I think that it's going to be kind of intriguing to see if that number rises again next year, just based off of, you know, what other guys have started at 23%. Like, that's a possibility of getting in eventually, and he has the longevity to do it. And if you look at some of his numbers, just in terms of totality, you know, he's up there with some guys that are in the Hall of Fame. So wouldn't be shocked to see Cole Hamels get in eventually. And Bobby Abreu is at 30%. I don't think Bobby Abreu is a Hall of Famer, but really good player. Don't think he's going to be a Hall of Famer, though, but he was there at 30%. So I think it's going to be an interesting year next year for sure. And Chase Utley probably ends up getting in the Hall of Fame, which, again, Chase probably my favorite player growing up. And it's one of those things where it's crazy that he's going to end up being in the Hall of Fame. And somebody where, you know, as a kid, you didn't maybe realize you were watching a Hall of Famer, but when you look back at it, definitely deserves Hall of Fame consideration. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Phillies Today. I hope everyone at least, you know, got a little release out of listening to me rant and rave for a few minutes. And I understand that things might not look good right now, but again, still got some offseason left, so maybe we can be surprised. But, you know, I'm a little depressed on the baseball team as we stand right now. So for Phillies 24/7, this has been Justin Morgenstein. Hopefully I have some better news to share with you next week. But until then, have a great weekend. Stay safe with the snow. And we'll talk next week. See ya.